Welcome everyone. I'd like to start by acknowledging that we're meeting on traditional land and pay my respects to Elders past, present and future. The ACT Women in Prisons Group and the ACT Community Coalition on Corrections welcomes your attendance to this public forum on strip searching in the ACT prison. I'd also like to acknowledge Deb Foskey, Greens Party, that's just walked in, and given a special acknowledgement to the support that Deb has given us over all these years while she's been in Assembly. Thank you, Deb. I'm Deb Wybron, and I'm the convener of the ACT Women in Prisons Group, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest speakers today, Carmel Wise from Canberra Rape Crisis Centre, Jack Dolby from SAMHSA, Service Assisting Male Survivors of Sexual Assault, and Dr. Sandy Plummer, Clinical Psychologist. We'll hear from each of our speakers and have some question times at the end. First, we'll be hearing from Carmel Wise from the Canberra Rape Crisis Centre. The Canberra Rape Crisis Centre provides sexual assault counselling for women and children and has been operating as an essential service in Canberra for 32 years. Carmel is a social worker and has worked in the field of counselling for 12 years. Carmel has worked with Canberra Rape Crisis Centre since January. So with no further ado, I will allow Carmel to address you. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. I guess I've been asked to talk about strip searching today, which meant I had to do lots of reading, as I have relatively little knowledge and no experience of what a strip search is. I have read the new legislation and accompanying explanatory statement, the writings of Sister Inside, as well as the writings of others obtained by googling on the internet. My understanding of why people go to prison is because a judicial decision has been made that determines a person will lose their right to liberty, to freedom. I tried, and would ask you to try for a moment, to think about what living in a prison is like. Being incarcerated means not being able to make decisions about where you go, what you do, which friends you will see, what and when you will eat and sleep. The choices we who are here today are free to make every day are no longer possible. So in prison you now live in a world where not only do you no longer have a say about your personal, family and social life, you also do not have a say about what happens to your body. The Corrections Management Amendment Bill 2008 allows for strip searching. What this means is that your body is no longer your own. It means that without your consent, you can be unclothed, have your body and your clothes searched. It means that without your consent, you are expected to comply. And if you don't comply, then the corrections officer has the authority to touch your body and make you comply. It would be incorrect for you to assume that a strip search would be a one-off incident. Strip searches happen when you go to or from court, when you have been out of a corrective officer's supervision for a period of time, and even after being visited by family and or friends. As a woman, I would find a strip search embarrassing, humiliating and degrading. I would in fact go through many emotions, from shame to guilt. Sorry. Somehow feeling responsible, to anger, and I guess the worst thing would be feeling powerless, to not being able to have a say in what happens to my body, in not being able to say no. I guess I was writing this, and I guess it's explanatory, is that I don't understand that. I have never experienced that. And I'm not sure if a prison system should be about taking away people's dignity as well as their freedom. The Canberra Rape Crisis Centre has spent 32 years working with women and children who have experienced sexual violence. Our clients, our service, provides a 24-hour crisis first response line, counsellors and advocates. We work with people that, well, in fact, 85% of our clients actually never make a report to the police. There's a lot of research as to why there is hidden non-reporting in relation to sexual abuse. Much of it is, and statistics and research could bear this out, is that a lot of sexual assault happens by people known to the victims. It usually happens, I think it's like 64%, in a residence of some sort. So actually speaking out, so actually breaking the silence of what's happened is very complex. And part of the reason is breaking up families, not feeling sure if it's a sexual assault or not, feeling responsible. In fact, feeling some of the feelings that I sort of went through when I was thinking about what would happen if I was had to submit, and I would have to submit to a strip search. Canberra Crisis also provides counselling for women and children and young people who've been sexually abused. We provide community education programs, so we actually go out to schools and work with other professionals, talking about things like responding to a disclosure of sexual abuse, building healthy relationships in schools. And we also do systematic advocacy and input into government policy. Canberra Rape Crisis has played a really important role in the Canberra community, but also regional New South Wales. We have a specific Indigenous program to address needs in Indigenous communities. I guess I'm happy to answer. Sorry, I've had the flu. I'm really happy to answer any questions. But I guess my position as a woman is that strip searches aren't necessary and they're intrusive. And if a person or a woman has had previous experience of sexual abuse, then this is going to become or re-traumatise the victim. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Carmel. Next we'll hear from Jack Dolby from SAMHSA. He will speak from his experience of providing support, information and referral services for male survivors and their supporters, friends and families. SAMHSA has been operating as an essential service in Canberra since 1998, and Jack has been working with the program for 2 years now. So please help me welcome Jack.
Thank you, Deb. Can people hear me all right through this thing? I'm not used to this sort of gear. Normally we have to shout. Working in the community centre, there aren't usually resources for things like microphones, lecterns, rooms. Okay, sorry. And thanks for that stuff as well, Carmel, because you've covered a little bit of the ground that I was going to look at, and I won't repeat what you've done. I'd like to say, first of all, thanks very much for giving SAMHSA the chance to talk at a forum like this. I know a lot of the energy for this initiative has come from the activists in relation to women's rights and wanting to prevent further violence and abuse against women. It's also true that a lot of men have also experienced sexual assault, particularly as children. Unfortunately, the stats are something like 1 in 6, as best as we can tell, in most OECD countries. I didn't bring a lot of the academic stuff because it tends to change from time to time anyway, but we do know from our experience and from everything that I've read that the proportion of men in prison who will have experienced abuse, generally as children, sometimes often as adults, will be higher than that, probably at least as high as that. So we're looking at 1 in 3, maybe as high as 1 in 2 of the guys who go into prison will have some kind of background of sexual assault. Usually in the home, very often in schools, very often they'll have been re-victimised or re-traumatised as adults, often within the prison system itself. So these are guys who are essentially, and pretty much depending on how early this happens, their whole self, if you like, is defined or limited in their view by the fact that this stuff has occurred to them. A lot of the work that we do, and most of the men we see are on the outside. We don't do an enormous amount of work in prisons, partly because there isn't a prison in the ACT. We do a bit of telephone work, particularly with Junie. But we do see quite a few guys in Belconnen and Simonson remand. I've lost my train of thought, forgive me. But while a lot of guys are dealing with these sorts of issues, they've also got, you know, the everyday, day-to-day sort of ongoing quotidian stuff that happens to all of us in life. Now, when you're in a situation where, pretty much by definition, your power is being taken away from you, you're being ordered from pillar to post, you don't have control over anything, it's going to re-trigger experiences and thoughts and feelings that were caused by the abuse in the first place. So to be in prison, by definition, is going to make it harder for everyone, in our experience for the guys, to get over the impacts of their assault. But to go through the actual strip search process is just, it's so close to home. We've had a couple of the guys I worked with recently who were in remand that specifically come to see us because of the issue of being re-traumatised, their stuff being reactivated by having to go through the regular strip searches. They do very much experience it, as I've read on a lot of the emails and the sites, as a re-abuse, because it's humiliating, because of the powerlessness that comes from having your clothes taken away, you know, the insertion of various searching objects and so forth. There's no way that he can't bring that stuff back up for them. Now, what this means is that it's very difficult for them to move any, you know, much past that sort of initial traumatisation phase. What occurs is that as they re-experience this stuff, they're kind of thrown back. You know, this, I'm making this sound a little bit more simplistic than it is. This is essentially what occurs. They're essentially thrown back to the initial event, and they're still in that, often, like, you know, sort of screaming child period. And they will use whatever strategies they've got to deal with that stuff, and they will find it increasingly difficult to move on from those strategies. Now, I don't want to generalise, but what we find as a normal rule is it's the strategies that these guys have adopted to help them to deal with their abuse in the first place that have landed them inside. Generally, it's drug or alcohol abuse. Often, it's use of violence against other males or against women or against children. Often, it's sort of falling into that whole criminal lifestyle thing. A lot of these guys find it really, really difficult to hold down a job. So they've already called on the strategies that have ended them up in, you know, incarceration in the first place as a result of their original experience. To then be having to re-experience this to a large extent when they're on the inside just makes it impossible for them to move forward. They're just going through this endless kind of cycle. There's so little work you can do with guys when they're on the inside anyway, because it's such a brutal environment. To have to put this on top of it as well, anyway, it makes our life very difficult, and we're just the people trying to help them. I think it makes their lives essentially intolerable. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm just a counsellor, I'm not a professor or anything. I can't necessarily say, well, incarceration is a bad thing. I must say it sort of looks that way from the outside. But if you have to have that kind of system, to set up something that's an essential part of it, which re-traumatises a huge proportion of your population, as I say, our estimates, it's going to be up to half of the guys who are in there, is just going to make the rehabilitative purpose of incarceration, if there really is one, almost impossible to achieve. I read somewhere on some of the discussion boards about how successful strip searching is in actually stopping drugs or contraband or weapons or whatever from coming in. I know the number's not high. I can't really comment on that stuff. What I can predict with some accuracy, just on our experience at Samsung, is that if you keep putting guys through this kind of stuff, you are going to increase the amount of drug abuse, alcohol abuse, assault, violence and suicide within the prison population generally, because it's going to make it impossible for guys to move past that point. And one would hope that even the powers that be, with some honourable exceptions who are present, would be able to pick up on that as a basic fact. So I'm hoping that that can be one of the things that we can bring from this forum today. Deb, I understand the format is that there's questions at the end.
Yes.
So please feel free to ask me, Rachel or I, who's the senior counsellor from SAMHSA, anything that you want about the service or any of our experienced guys. And thanks very much for your attention today.
Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Sandy Plummer, who has a PhD as a clinical psychologist and is a past lecturer in community counselling program at the University of Canberra. Sandy has a long-standing interest in trauma, especially on marginalised people, and is currently in private practice. So please help me welcome Sandy.
Oh, no. That's okay. A lot of what I wanted to say has already been expressed really clearly by Jack, and I just want to thank him for his comments there. And also, I just want to bring attention back to the comment that Carmel made, which I think is one of the really important things, is that we can take away a person's freedom, but we don't necessarily have to take away their dignity. And I think that that's incredibly important. When we implement particular legal processes, we often forget that these legal processes can be implemented across a wide range of individuals. We don't stop to think about how each of these legal processes might impact on individuals with different histories, different backgrounds. We also don't stop and think about what the culture of these particular legal procedures might do to the people who are implementing those procedures, the prison guards, the people that are in the system, and to the system in general in terms of its attitude towards incarceration, its attitude toward prisoners in general. What we're saying in this type of legislation is that an attitude of dehumanizing, an attitude of humiliation is okay. What we're doing is saying that it's okay to train people to humiliate and dehumanize other people. What we're saying is that part of the legal system is not about rehabilitation, but is about power over for particular purposes. In this particular case, we're looking at how random strip searches might impact on different prisoners in different ways, and how this might impact on how the system then responds to those prisoners, and the prisoners respond to the system. And I think the comments that Jack made are very clear around that. In particular, I'm interested in how such random strip searches might impact on individuals with a history of trauma and sexual abuse. As you probably can tell by my accent, I come from the United States originally. I have had one experience in my days as a student protester with strip search. At the time when in the United States, this was an ongoing practice for anybody who was held in remand of any kind, and in particular was used against those of us who were seen to be young, fit, and middle class. I guess that one of the things I just want to say is that the shock to the system of someone coming from a middle class background, thinking of myself as pretty tough and pretty unlikely to be able to be affected by anything that these other people were doing, made it, the shock of it worse. And it also opened my eyes to what people in disadvantaged situations experience in an ongoing way. And I had legal resources, etc. A lot of other people didn't have that sort of resource. And I hunched that our treatment as middle-class young students was less severe and less violent than the treatment that's often experienced by other individuals. In the United States, currently, there have been many legal cases and lawsuits against strip searching in the prison systems. It is understood that strip searching without reasonable suspicion and expected positive outcome, and these are the two things, without reasonable suspicion and expected positive outcome, following an individualized evaluation of the likelihood of contraband. So there's three elements here. One is that it should be reasonable suspicion. Two, that you should expect to be finding something there, and that the outcome should be positive for the prison system, not negative for the prison system. And thirdly, that there should be an individualized evaluation before strip searches are put in place. The U.S. court has said that if these conditions are not in place, that this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment in the United States. And these are the words that the court ruling used. It describes strip searching as demeaning, dehumanizing, undignified, humiliating, horrifying, unpleasant, embarrassing, repulsive, and signifying degradation and submission. In doing a search, I came across a description of a British system, study that was done, where they described strip searching in the following way. And this is a little bit long, but I think it's probably useful to read it. Strip searching of prisoners both on remand and convicted in British prisons started some years ago. It was introduced for security reasons. Concern has been expressed about the use of strip searching, particularly when used upon women, prisoners, and minority groups. And some have claimed it to be used as intimidation or insult. Duh. I guess it is all I would say about that. There has been very little general publicity about it, which is a little difficult to understand. This is a description that one of the women who had been through strip searching said. She said that the searches were carried out in a situation in which there were windows through which passing prison officers could see the person standing in the nude. All of the searches were similar in execution. She was told to enter the cubicle, take off all her clothes. Four prison officers, mostly male, were present. One stood outside the cubicle door, which was a half door, and she had to pass her clothes out of it. The other prisoner officer stood around outside. It took 10 minutes to search her clothing, and during this time she was required to stand nude in the presence of the four other officers. She was then told to step outside the cubicle and had to stand in front of the four prison officers. At first her front was inspected, and then she was told to turn so that her back could be inspected. She had to turn facing the prison officers while one of them examined the sole of her feet, touching the soles of her feet, and again touching the palms of her hand. While in remand, this woman reported that she became very anxious and could not sleep the night before she knew she was going to be strip searched. This continued for a number of nights afterwards. By then, another strip search was due, and so the process perpetuated itself during the whole period of being incarcerated. She related being strip searched and being sexually assaulted. She had said that she had been sexually assaulted, but that the extent of the rape when she was age 18 was not necessarily what was brought up by the strip searches. That in fact, what she kept seeing in the strip searches in her nightmares were the prison officers and what she was afraid that they might do to her. Another woman who had no childhood history of sexual abuse also reported having serious nightmares, anxiety attacks, being so frightened that she wanted to not engage in an appeal of her sentence because every time she left and re-entered the prison, she had to be strip searched. She also refused to see her children because every time she went on visitations, she again had to be strip searched. She began to try to avoid any situation in which she might have to leave the cell for fear that she would again be strip searched. The rationale for strip searching is that it is an important and necessary measure for ensuring security of corrective services facilities and the safety of the community, the staff, the visitors, and the prisoners. The major objective of conducting strip searches is to prevent entry of illicit drugs and other prohibited items, including equipment that could be used to escape from a prison or used for self or other types of self-harm. In a study conducted in Queensland between 1999 and 2002, only two searches out of 41,728 resulted in the discovery of any contraband. Officers argued that strip searching leads to a deterrent effect. However, even though there were this many strip searches, only that amount of contraband seized, there were still many incidences within the prison of drugs and other illicit contraband being found. The rationale seems thin, especially for random searches. Many individuals who are in prisons have suffered different forms of trauma throughout their lifetime. This same Queensland study found that 37% of the women prisoners had suffered sexual abuse before the age of 16, and that 42% of them had had non-consensual sex. 35% had had sexual abuse before the age of 10. These statistics were compared with 8% of the general population. These figures do not include all forms of trauma, only sexual abuse. They do not include domestic violence or other violence inflicted by in persons. Being compulsorily required to strip search in front of a prison officer was seen by the women in this study to be demeaning, humiliating, as it would be for whether you're talking about men or women. Even strip searches conducted in a totally professional and impersonal manner led to humiliation that was compounded by the fact that the prisoners had to be supervised and relate on a daily basis to the people who had seen them naked and often who had touched their bodies and in the very least had seen them in a very vulnerable state. In our Western society, where public nakedness is far removed from the accepted norm, this immediately reduces the dignity of any relationship between the prison guard and the prisoner. However, for a woman who has been sexually abused or a man who's been sexually abused, strip searching can be more than humiliating and undignifying. In some instances, it can be re-traumatizing for women who have already been greatly traumatized in childhood or through adult sexual abuse. Most female prisoners in the Queensland study said that the strip search had diminished their self-confidence as human beings and greatly enhanced their feeling of vulnerability and worthlessness. Strip searching can generally undermine the best attempts being made by prison authorities to rehabilitate prisoners through programs such as counseling that seek to rebuild self-esteem, cognitive, and assertive skills. Trauma leaves long-lasting effects on many of its victims. especially when trauma occurs early in life. One of the things that many people fail to understand is that trauma actually can have an effect on the way that the brain receives and processes information and how the individual perceives threat. When someone has a history of trauma, they are often more hypervigilant and more sensitive to stressors, and they also take a longer time to recover from perceived stressors. As can be seen from the earlier descriptions, prisoners report this to be the consequence of strip searching. Effects of these early persistent trauma responses mean that individuals develop a lower tolerable level of arousal. A lower tolerable level of arousal means that when a stressor comes, the arousal goes up. These individuals are less likely to be able to continue to respond. They most likely will react. Actually, what happens in the brain is that you actually get a disconnect between the cortex and the limbic system. In other words, as your tolerable level of arousal goes up, you become less and less able to think and feel at the same time. This is a form of dissociation and disconnect. And usually what happens as people go outside of their tolerable level of arousal is that they tend to disconnect in a significant number of ways that will be important to the rehabilitation process. They may dissociate, vague out, disappear. They may have emotional outbursts that are impulsive and inconsolable. These impulsive outbursts may be such that being able to talk to someone to calm them down isn't possible. And that's a neurological response. It's not that the people are just being particularly difficult about it. They actually don't have access to the thinking process at that particular point in time. They may also end up with obsessive thoughts. These obsessive thoughts may include thoughts of self-harm, thoughts of revenge, or thoughts of negative self-statements. As this goes on, the person may become a more angry individual, a more difficult individual to control in a system that's set up to control individuals, or they may withdraw physically. They may self-harm, or they may engage in impulsive physical actions such as attacking other people. Now, if you go back to what I said in the beginning, that in fact this sort of strip searching should be for the benefit of the institution, should show some kind of positive results, you can see that in many cases this won't show a positive result for the institution, but in fact will set people up to be less easily controlled within the environment of the institution. So it's not serving the institution. It's not collecting more contraband. And it's certainly not serving the individual. None of the responses that come as a result of re-traumatization or going outside of one's tolerable level of arousal, none of these responses make prison guards' lives easier. None of these responses make the situation more conducive to rehabilitation. Prisoners with a history of trauma will often respond to the control in the prison environment with resistance or withdrawal. However, the loss of control of their body and who views and touches their body will be particularly provocative and may lead to more hypervigilance and continue to lower their ability to deal with arousal, leading to more outbursts or more withdrawal, lowering the chances of a good outcome from any rehabilitation program. All for what purpose? Even for individuals with no history of childhood sexual assault or trauma, such procedures lead to shame responses, which can be associated with rage and withdrawal. In a state of withdrawal, individuals are less likely to be able to benefit from programs, and because of the increased hypervigilance due to the random nature, they are less likely to be able to engage in personal development. The recommendation would be first to get rid of all random strip searches. Secondly, if there are better deterrent available, then we should be using them. If a deterrent can be brought forward, which doesn't require such invasive procedures, then they should be used. Individual strip searches should only be used when, in fact, there is a notion that they are, that there's some suspicion of contraband, when there's some notion that this particular individual will respond to this type of search, and finally should really only be used in private, in the least invasive way, where the prisoner can select the gender of the person doing the strip search, where if there's a video cam present, that there's not someone actually viewing the video cam at the time of the strip search, but the video information be held for later viewing if needed in a court process, and where there is support for the individual post-strip search, which means that they can't occur on as frequent a basis as they currently occur.
Thank you. Just a couple of minutes, and I'd like to thank everyone for their information and for putting themselves on the spot and sharing from experiences known and not known, but being open-minded enough to actually be in that place of how that must feel and to do the research and to work with the people that are directly involved with this. I come from a background of being sexually, physically and emotionally assaulted from a very small child, but I have never been physically, emotionally or sexually assaulted as much as I was when I was 11 years old and first put into an institution. It is sexual assault by the state. If you don't want your clothes taken off, they will take them off for you. You are mouthed off at about that, about your body. You're talked about. It is ongoing. And if they ever only strip searched me to the way legislation says that you can be strip searched, I don't think it would have made too much difference, really, because the comments won't. I'm one of the women that did bring down the strip searching stats because I refused visitors. I refused to go out for medicals anywhere. I refused to do many other so-called educational programs, so I could not be strip searched under those reasons. At first, I refused strip searches, and I was forcibly strip searched many, many times. I don't know if those days I knew much about dignity or humility, but I knew a lot about hatred. And I carried a lot of hatred with me for a long time. When I first found out that the ACT government had introduced new legislation around strip searching, I was in Brisbane, and all that hate came back. The pain that sisters of mine would suffer the same. When you know the trauma, you don't wish that upon anybody, nobody. It is my belief that we have many prisoners in prison, and they're not all bad people. They're just people that have taken a wrong track. And they're people that need help. And that help's available. We're being told that if anything positive that could stop strip searching could go back to corrections, it would be useful today. Well, you know, I think there's lots of ways we could stop strip searching, but you know, one really good one is actually give us the money that you spend on per prisoner into the community sector, which was a really, really good suggestion. Thanks, Kiki. And we'll look after them. We'll get these people the proper help that they need, you know. So I'm going to leave the questions up to the floor, and thanks very much.